Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, both you and I have reached kind of that 15-ish point of the season, and we're both under the weather. It took that long.
That's right. We need to get our conditioning up in the off season so we can get through a full 82 games. So we're both sick. This will be a great show, I'm sure.
all kinds of energy right from the get-go. Today, woo! Though, yeah, woo! Today's show, though, we're going to talk about Brandon Ingram because, once again, it's a slow day, and we therefore have to live with outside takes about the young Lakers. So that was always fun. That's always great to wake up to. We're going to talk about the team vibe. The Lakers currently sit at 7-6, and there is some good stuff to look at. So we're gonna talk about that. But where I really need to start is I think we should both. Should we do a round of applause? A round of applause for the Lakers and not being interested in Carmelo Anthony this second time around.
You know, that is something they've done twice, right? Like, yeah. Over the summer, it was that too. So, yeah, that's the wise decision. I don't revel in Carmelo's downfall quite the way that other people do. Like, I was never a big fan of his game.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It may have been you, but somebody pointed out that – I think it was Damon, actually, that pointed out that the difference between like how Vince Carter handled his physical decline,
yeah,
and how Carmelo has, right? Like, Carter's been a solid role player for several years now.
Yep.
And if you're not of a certain age, you know, and maybe you've just seen the highlights, like, Vince Carter is the most insane athlete I've ever seen on the
incredible
NBA level, just from a hops type of standpoint, right? And explosiveness. And now, like, he's barely dunking, but he's been able to alter his game in a way that Carmelo, I don't want to say couldn't. He could have. He just didn't want to. So.
That's the big thing there. And that's what I talked about yesterday when you know, I was thankful that the Lakers once again said, you can come here. Well, it sounds like they weren't interested at all the second time. But then over the summer, apparently Magic tried to have a conversation with him and told him that you have to commit to working hard. You have to commit to coming off of the bench. And according to Stephen A. Smith, Melo didn't take Magic's calls, so
tells you all you need to know, right?
Exactly. And it's like, I hope I don't come across as reveling in it. I don't think it's ever cool when somebody struggles the way that he seems to be really struggling, and reality is just that tough to deal with. That's never fun. I can't imagine he's in a very good place emotionally, psychologically right now, and that does suck. But at the end of the day, our job is to talk about and analyze the best ways for the Lakers to be successful. And I don't think you can have Carmelo Anthony on a good team in 2018 because he won't accept a role that would be productive for whatever team he plays for.
Yeah, I don't think it's any more complicated than that.
That's really what it is. I hope, you know, I think this winds up resulting in his retirement. I just can't imagine he has very much left to give at this point, but that's where we are. Where we also are, though, is talking about Brandon Ingram and his game, and he had some comments after practice yesterday, or today, yesterday, by the time you guys are listening to this. And he said, one of the things that he said was that he has to study the tape, figure out where his shots are coming from, and then get better at those shots. And one of the shots that he says, or that he singled out, was being more effective and more efficient in the mid-range. And, like, I just wanted, this is where I would not be very good in these scrums, is because I would just be like, no, 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 no. Like, I don't think I would handle that response very well. You said you're working on a video right now, though, about his shot selection and where his shots are coming from. And you had a tweet basically about some of the stats that you're seeing there, but is there anything that is either matching the eye test or taking it a step further for you?
So from diving into the tape, I think that helps you get the reasons why in a lot of cases. I don't think that every mid-range jumper is a bad shot. There are some times where that's the correct shot and that's mm-hmm. the one to shoot when you're open. With Ingram playing the two in this starting lineup, he's coming off of more screens than he does when he plays the three. And part of the difficulty that he has is he has problems collecting his feet mm-hmm. and going up with it. And he's always going to curl to the point where it's either a curl, meaning he's receiving an off-ball screen, mm-hmm. and then he's going to curl tight around it rather than flare out to the three-point line. So it's always either going to be a drive to the basket, which teams will defend against, or a pull-up in mid-range, which teams are comfortable with letting you take those. Mm-hmm. Even on the clean looks that he gets from mid-range, which he should be taking, he could be taking a different route to get that from three-point range.
Yeah.
And it's very obvious that he's not comfortable with that range yet. I would argue that part of it is because he has not been developed to do that. There has been an approach to the development of Brandon Ingram. This is just my perception mm-hmm. that it's like what you tell a young kid, right? You can be anything you want to be when you grow up. That's what we tell kids, right? Yeah. The problem with that is that leaves the development and the path of his development in the player's hands more so than in the coaching staff and the organizations. That's something that he wants to work on, that he wants to be just cash from mid-range. That's great, and there are a couple guys in the league that are good enough at those shots to where it becomes a good shot for them. Mm-hmm. He's not close to that necessarily, but what I would have liked to see, and I kind of wonder if the ship has sailed, is the Kawhi Leonard path of development in San Antonio is get good at the efficient off-ball stuff
yep.
first as a cutter, as a spot-up shooter. Get good at those things. Understand where those shots come from. That's another thing from the tape with Ingram is he takes shots in different places than other guys do. I don't think he has a great understanding of where quality shots come from. When he gets open shots, he just has a problem understanding where they come from. And with Kawhi, it was, we're going to put you in the positions to take these shots. And I mean, you shoot six or seven times a game and that's it. And then Kawhi, after he mastered that, then he more of a triple threat type of guy, an off the dribble type of threat. And so he added to an already existing foundation of these are what the efficient shots are. To me, the Lakers skipped steps in Ingram's development by putting the ball in his hands last year.
Yeah. Yeah. As great as it is to say and be able to say that, wow, look at the guy. He handled point guard for stretches of last year. Like, as cool as that is a development and as positive a potential development that might have been, that might have actually hurt him long term.
I think because he's been so good on the defensive end this year, and I think that bears noting that he's taken a really nice leap forward there, that he's really just a mentality change on offense from being a really productive guy. And that might not be the 20, 22 point per game guy that he envisions himself as, at least at this point. Maybe he's that at 25, I don't know. But that he would be a very productive, like working toward helping you get wins on both ends of the court rather than just on the defensive end as he is now. But my question is does that make it even harder because it's a mentality change mm-hmm. rather than just a physical thing? Like, how a guy sees himself is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm actually going to build on that point here in a bit. We're going to take a quick second. When we come back, we'll finish up the conversation about Brandon Ingram, and then we'll look at some of the more positive things about this team. And they are there to be found if you know where to look. So we'll get to that here in a second. Today's show is brought to you in part by Metro Infinity. As you guys heard yesterday on the show, I tried to convince Jen that my next car should be an Infinity. I am not giving up in those efforts. They are just way too sleek of cars. And if or when I do eventually get that type of car, that type of vehicle, I'm going to look up our friends on 821 East Central Avenue in Monrovia, California. They have a brand new multi-million-dollar facility. They've been around for 25 years. They're the number one dealer in California. All of this I have told you guys before. So if you guys are looking or in the market for either new or used cars, go over and check them out either on metroinfinity.com or go check out their facility and let them know that we sent you here, that Locked On sent you, and they'll knock $500 off of the price of your purchase. So either give them a call, 626-599-7510. Go on MetroInfinity.com, wherever you want to go. Make sure you mention Locked On Lakers, and they'll treat you right. So you mentioned mentality and some of that stuff, and this is really where the game, like we've gotten incredible amounts of information. We have analytics on just about everything at this point, and that aspect of analysis has gotten better for it. But I think what that has done to a certain extent, though, because the information in those kinds of situations is so good, we tend to ignore the mentality stuff, the stuff that isn't really defined, the intangible. And I think here with Ingram, and one of the things that it's really obvious watching him versus a good shooter is you watch a good shooter and they know that that's, you know, that they're good at it, and they put themselves in situations as often as they possibly can to be able to shoot, because that's how they're going to help a team win. And you watch Ingram on well, either side of the court, really, but especially offensively, he's not going out of his way to put himself into those situations to be able to succeed. He stands straight up a bunch. His feet are kind of just kind of lackadaisical. His arms can kind of swing at his sides. And what that does is, even on those shots where it is apparent he has time, he should have time to be able to catch and shoot from three-pointers or from three-point range, that I think it convinces him, no, I actually have less time because I have to do so much more to get that shot off. Because you wind up having to completely rechange your posture and your feet and all those things. And I think what he does is, well, I don't have enough time to get that shot off. Let me just go straight into attacking a closeout that isn't necessarily coming. And I think that gets them into trouble.
Yeah, it's a couple of different things. One is the mentality approach of, you know, the guy to compare him to off of the ball is Kuzma, right? Kuzma works very hard to get open off of the ball.
Hands are always ready. Feet are always square on him.
And because of that, like, the chemistry on the offensive end with him and LeBron is very clear. And Ingram does not put that amount of effort into operating off of the ball. The second component of it is technique stuff. Because he's not comfortable pulling up like with a hard 1-2 step off of the dribble, he shoots a ton of shots after pump faking.
Yeah.
Like, he'll make a move and then he'll pump fake when he doesn't need to with that wingspan of his, right? He'll do this against small guys. He made the shot, but he did that against Jeremy Lin in the last game where he could have just gone straight up with it, but he pump faked. And I don't think it's because he's worried about Jeremy Lin. I think it's because he's not comfortable with the footwork, the 1-2 and go up on balance. So that pump fake actually gives him an extra second to collect himself, and then he can go up with it. But the problem with that is that now your shot's going to be contested, even if it's against a smaller player. And there are spots, and this is one of the things I'm going to highlight in the video, where if he could go up with clean footwork, even if it's a mid-range shot, like, hey, that's an open shot, take that. But because he does not do that and he breaks the rhythm of it, then it becomes a much harder shot.
Absolutely. And look, he is still young, and you know, the concern that I have is he has so many reps under his belt with some of these bad habits that it becomes tougher to fix that kind of thing. Like, I'd rather somebody have no habits whatsoever than have them be bad, because that means you have to break it, rethink the game, and then get back to fixing the actual problem. And he's developed some bad habits.
And that goes back to the whole, like, letting the player drive the car of player development. Mm-hmm. You can be anything you want to be when you grow up. Like, in my opinion, there's needed to be more direction from the coaching staff in his development rather than just keeping it that open-ended.
Yep, absolutely. But, you know, I think either way, the Lakers still have a good, impactful player, especially defensively, and that's kind of how unfortunately, because, you know, to get back to one of the points I made earlier, we have all these numbers on offense and counting stats and those kinds of things, that offense is the only way that we judge these players. And defensively, though, and now there is some, we are making strides in defining defensive metrics and stuff like that. And as that has happened, we've gotten smarter about analyzing the game. But it still doesn't get noted often enough how good he's been defensively this year.
He has. He's been very good, especially on the ball. And he's not getting back cut nearly as often as he was last year. He's been more attentive off of it. Part of the issue with that is on the defensive end, you can't always dictate how many plays you're involved in.
Yeah.
Right. So like the other night they decided to blitz Trae Young. Right. And we all talked, oh, Alonzo got pulled for Hart. Right. But they put Ingram on the ball and him and Chandler's collective length really bothered Young. Mm-hmm. Notice on the last play of the game, now Chandler saved this. Every time in an end game situation like that, you're going to set a ball screen for your guard. They didn't send the screener on that. They just let, and Trae beat him easily off of the dribble on that. And I talk about this all the time. That's not a fair matchup for BI, but that's something where while he's been very good, there's only so many possessions that he's involved in and disrupting just as a result of it being the defensive end and him not being a big, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the follow up question there is there more that they can do to put him in more of those situations
on the defensive end? You mean?
Yeah.
I think it depends on matchups and kind of he gives them a certain degree of versatility, as does Chandler's addition, because Chandler's able to show higher mm-hmm. on pick and rolls than JaVale is. This is something that Luke was talking about the other day, that if you want to blitz pick and rolls, which is a trap, if you know that's something that they didn't have the option of, if you want to do that with Brandon Ingram and Tyson Chandler, that's a lot of length and that's you know, like an option for Luke. So I think it depends on game to game. I just think that BI, his on ball defense this year and his length just gives Luke more things to go to, but that can be difficult to get at a high volume. That's just the nature of defense. It's not Ingram or anyone else's fault. One last thing on this mm-hmm. is that you mentioned counting stats. I could see Ingram. Like Ingram could be a very, very, very good player at like 12-5-5, but that doesn't look or feel as good as 17-8-5-3 or whatever it is, right? Uh-huh. Like what I was talking about earlier about like putting himself in position off of the ball but not having the ball in his hands as much. And I know many people think, hey, move him to the second unit, put him in the ball in his hands more. I actually think both things can be true. Like he can be the main guy on the second unit, whether he starts or not, right? Sub him out early, put him in with the second unit, be on the ball there. But bro, when it comes down to it, LeBron James and Brandon Ingram are going to have to mesh well. LeBron's going to be playing 38 to 40 minutes in games that matter once we get to the playoffs. You can stagger their minutes all they want, but you can't. And BI is going to have to get better at operating off of the ball if things just overall are going to work.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do think it's possible. I do think eventually they might be able to figure it out.
Yeah,
but this is the other thing too that we talk about context and we talk about you know the situations under which things happen. We knew this was going to be the case here. we knew that it was going to be a kind of a tricky fit, and it turns out that winds up being right. And because of the confirmation bias, and because it's something that people were a little concerned about, it gets made into a bigger deal than I think it should be at this point of the season. But it doesn't. It gives off the effect, or the response that I see to a lot of it online is, it's just not going to work. The experiment, and not only is it not going to work, but the experiment isn't worth their time. And that's where I just completely flat out disagree. It's very much worth everybody's time that they figure this out.
I mean, what's the alternative, right?
Right.
So whether it's Brandon or Lonzo or Josh or even Kuz, I don't think all four of those young guys are going to be around when the Lakers try to win a title, right? I think in a lot of ways this is a tryout year, but we're 13 games into the season and it behooves everybody to try and figure it out. Like, so for example, in the Atlanta game, I thought the Lakers did a few different things with Lonzo that made him look better on offense than he had before. He had the ball in his hands a little bit more, was getting it on the move. First double-digit assist game of the season, right? There's going to be a process of that that's going to be harder with Brandon and Lonzo than it is with Josh and Kuz, because, of course, it takes the guys who had the ball in their hands last year longer to adapt than, like, Josh Hart and Kuz, their role isn't that different than it was last year.
Yeah,
they're mostly doing the same things, just with a better player around them in LeBron, like spoon feeding them, and Rondo as well, right?
Go ahead. And even you're talking about a better player in LeBron, but Lonzo and Ingram are going to continue to get better, and that's going to take an adjustment for everybody that's going to be receiving those passes too.
100%. No, that's a great point. And so that is something that you can talk about it, you can theorize it, but the actual in-game reps, there's nothing that can replace those, and we're only 13 games in. If we're having this same conversation 41 games into the season at the All-Star break, then that's a problem. Yeah. But for now, these are growing pains that I think were not difficult to anticipate.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick second here and come back, and I'm honestly just going to ask you, find me some good stuff about this season. And it's not that hard to look. We'll figure it out, so hang tight. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Mazuma. Mazuma USA has been incredible at working with me to get the show's finances in order, and they've laid the foundation of getting all of that done and taken care of for me. So moving forward, I have a very minimal task of maintaining that order and maintaining that organization, and they've been incredible. And look, I said earlier in the show that I'd like to buy an Infinity. If I spoke to some of my accountants and all of that, they would point out to me that probably isn't the best idea. And they're very good at being available for those kinds of conversations whenever I might need to have them. So make sure you guys call them at 213-947-6926. Again, that's 213-947-6926. Mazuma is your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. All right. The Lakers, like I said, or like we've mentioned a few times at this point, sit at 7-6. They are, what is it, a couple games out, maybe a game out of what would be the playoffs right now if they started today. They are about where most people anticipated they would be. And while I think a lot of people rightfully freaked out over barely beating Atlanta and giving up yet another late lead and all of that, I think there were things to be rightfully concerned about there. But it was the second night of a back-to-back, and winning games when you don't play very well, or winning games that you know you still have to take care of business no matter who you're playing against. Mm-hmm. Like that's the mark to me of a good team. The difference between a good team and a mediocre team, and that the Lakers won that game matters a lot.
Right. Yeah. Atlanta or otherwise. I mean, they basically played about as well as they did against Toronto. Right. But they were playing Atlanta instead of Toronto.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. But yeah, the way I see it is that this team has a ton of capacity left, and they've only been looked really bad or been blown out, at least in that one Toronto game. Lonzo and Brandon have not played well to start the season as a whole.
Yeah.
Those are the two most important young players. You know, Kuz is shooting sub 30% from 3-point range. LeBron is just can't make a damn free throw in the clutch, right?
And it's the weirdest thing.
Right. And I feel like a lot of things haven't gone right. KCP has been a, you know, missing person he's been better recently, but, you know, he's been way worse than you expected him to be. And so I just feel like a lot of these things, I feel like the only thing that's happened that's been unexpected in a really positive way has been the Lakers are getting just like bonkers production from two vet minimum centers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've got 48 minutes of production at the five spot now, that those guys are making the vet minimum. They're probably getting 18 to 20 million value of, you know, what they're actually doing on the court.
Yep.
That is also, even though it's unexpected, I don't see that changing that much. I think JaVale's been a little more tired in recent games, but I think that like having Tyson to be able to go to, I think by and large, they're going to continue to play to this level. So they're 7-6. The two most important young guys haven't played well. And your second best scorer in Kuzma is not hitting open shots that, like he did last year, and you're still like what right now on the doorstep of the playoffs.
Yep.
Like they've got so much
capacity. Despite a tough schedule too. Like it's not like they've been playing like bad teams all the time.
Absolutely. And real quick, Anthony, who's the second best team in the Western Conference?
I can't give you that one. Maybe Denver, I would say. Maybe.
That speaks to how wide open it is, right?
Portland, I guess.
Yeah, Portland might be, right? And I think Portland record-wise is there. Or Denver, I know they've lost a couple games recently. But those teams are that in that spot. Like, Lakers beating both of those teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're nowhere near at capacity. Why can't this team get to the Western Conference Finals? I don't even have to be that big of a homer to think that that's totally plausible, right? Especially when you get like full 100% LeBron, like putting all gears on. Is LeBron James going to lose a playoff series to this Denver Nuggets team?
I would not imagine that's going to be the case.
So anyway, those are the good things that are my reasons for optimism.
I completely agree with all of them. And I think the other thing too that we have to point out here, especially regarding the centers, is that the way that they are being, it'd be one thing if JaVale was out there making threes.
Right.
You know, like it'd be one thing if they were doing things that you can't imagine they can't continue to recreate over the course of the season. You have 48 minutes of that position. If you were to tell me heading into the season, hey, 24 of those minutes are going to go to JaVale McGee, and 24 of those minutes are going to go to Tyson Chandler, can both those guys make that workload work? I would say yes. And now, if you would have asked me that they would be this good and Tyson Chandler would make an immediate impact in the way that he has, I would be a little somewhat surprised about that. But again, though, it was such a gaping hole in the roster that it makes sense that he would come in and be and he would have the impact that he has.
With his strengths and weaknesses just fitting so perfectly.
Yeah. And a lot of the things that the Lakers are making work, you feel like you can continue to see that predicting that those things are going to continue. And that right there is the foundation of what we cared about early on in the season is, okay, are we starting to see the identity that the Lakers are going to play with? Are they competitive with good teams? Are they taking care of bad teams? How do they look when they're playing poorly? Can they still win when they play poorly? And we're getting the answers to a lot of those things in the positive result.
And they're going to find little things along the way that work, that help, that accumulate in that. So for example, like I was talking about Lonzo in the Atlanta game, and they had him setting a lot more screens than he normally does. And it worked out for, like, LeBron hit three threes off of screens that Lonzo set. It flowed into other actions. It got Lonzo on the move, not just being a spot up shooter. And so I would very much imagine that in this next game against Portland, a team that Lonzo always plays terribly against, you're going to see Lonzo setting a lot more screens. So it's like, hey, now we got this one little thing that works just a little bit better for us. They're going to find that for Brandon. They're going to find better things for Hart, for Kuzma, and they're going to accumulate that along the way. So by the time January rolls around, you got Lonzo setting those screens just like he has been for a couple months. Ingram's doing that thing that they figured out works off of LeBron. Kuz is doing it, and now you got yourself a squad.
Yeah, I completely agree. Could this opening season could these first 13 games have gone differently or in a more positive way? Yes, absolutely. They aren't undefeated. So, but anybody who hoped to see them be undefeated at this point of the season, like nobody was like realistically talking about that stuff. Anybody who was realistic about this team said, be competitive, show me some signs of why you can continue to improve, and you can go. I'd be freaking out right now if they had a better record but looked tapped out. Because they have to, like in the NBA, over the course of 82 games, you have to continue to improve and you have to show me ways that you can. And the Lakers have done that to the nth degree.
And on the side of that, of just looking at the record, if you look at them in the standings, they haven't fallen behind. They have not dug themselves a hole at the beginning of the season. And that was very possible going into this year that they did that. And they're right there where they need to be in terms of the standings.
A certain somebody may or may not have predicted on an ESPN podcast that the West wasn't going to be as insane this year and got laughed at. So,
yeah. We did not laugh at you.
That's oh no no, I got laughed at in the group chat, like in my oh, okay. with the SB Nation guys.
Yeah. Got it.
Shouts
well,
to
well played, yeah.
Shouts to the Houston Rockets for just completely massacring their team in the offseason. That's amazing. All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Plenty of reason to continue to be optimistic about this team and have a good feeling about them moving forward. They will be back in action again. They still don't play tomorrow, right?
They play on Wednesday, yeah.
Oh, they do play on Wednesday.
They got Portland for a third time already.
Yeah.
And then they head out on the road.
That's almost a bummer that they have Portland three times the way that they have early on in the season, given how well they're playing. But
they're more equipped to defend him with Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
That was something that even in the win, the last one, it was like he was trying JaVale and Zubats, and you have to show higher on Lillard and McCollum or yeah. else they're going to just kill you off of screens. But if you do that, they just blow right by Zubats and JaVale. Yeah. Chandler's a little bit better at doing that. So they're a little more well-equipped, but we'll see. It would be nice to go 2-1 against them. They're a good team.
I also really appreciated Tyson Chandler basically saying he didn't give a single bleep in Phoenix the last couple seasons.
It was so obvious on tape, dude. Like, it was like, I don't know. If I was a Suns fan, I'd be mad. Like, they're justified in there. I understand why they were like, he's not going to help you guys. That it's yeah. like, if you were watching closely, like, that's a guy that just did not care. Just always got to consider the human element.
Absolutely. All right. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow after the Lakers hopefully beat the Portland Trailblazers. Hopefully. Maybe. Have a good one.